What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebrand and Safety. In today's episode, we are talking to a brand new health and safety professional. What is that? Well, I'll do the intro and then I'll explain.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent. Okay, guys. Rebranding safety, doing exactly what it says on the tin. Welcome back, welcome to the podcast. We are challenging the perceptions of health and safety. We are changing those kind of... No, wait, we are... It's because you're here, mister, that's why. Putting me off. We are challenging those over-the-top practices of health and safety and changing the perception of it as well. We do that through long-form conversations on this podcast and tips and tricks, how-tos and vlogs and keynotes, etc. The whole shebang over on YouTube as well. So if you listen on YouTube, hit that subscribe button and the bell and all those other buttons. If you're on Spotify, you can hit follow the leader, you know, all that malarkey. And all the other buttons as well, if it remotely looks positive, then it will help me get bigger, which is good, because I like to be big. Anyway, let's talk about today's guest. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebrand and Safety. Today we've got an interesting guest, and that's like genuinely really interesting. It's a like pretty much brand new safety professional. A person who kind of, to use his words, has kind of suffered through safety as a tradie, as a tradesman, through the years working in construction sites, and then decided, you know what, screw it, I'm going to be a health and safety professional. So he's pretty much like brand new into this industry, into this profession, and kind of was just really excited to talk to him about kind of, you know, at its rawest form of like, what was it like being... You know, being the kind of recipient of safety advice, etc., and why you decided to kind of join our industry. Well, let's be honest, it does come with a brand. There's not a lot of people coming on. And last time I was at the Congress in February, the guy from the Irish was there, and it was something crazy, like 70 or 80% of them of our profession. He's going to retire in 5 years. So we need like new people, fresh people. Steve is quite young as well. Well, there's his name. That's his name. Today's guest is Stephen Ashby. He's like coming out of the woodwork on LinkedIn as well. So make sure you connect with him. We'll put his links in the description as well. We're basically just talking to him about why he decided to join the profession and what it was like before, you know, working on construction sites, etc. Just a general good old chinwag with a nice bloke. So let's get into the podcast. Right, Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, James.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you very much. So why don't you give us a... We're going to kind of talk about... It's an interesting one with yourself today. And I'm actually really excited about this because with so many people that are like... And don't take this the wrong way. So many people that are like, you know, experts in their field of like psychology or sociology or safety professional for 20 years. And I was thinking a while back, you know, I want to talk to some people that are like the life and soul of what we do in the British economy, which is just doing the job. And talk to like normal people like me. I'm just a safety professional on a day job with kind of like a weird hobby of doing a podcast. So I was kind of really excited when you messaged me about, you know, like the podcast, and I said, hey, you want to come on and talk about it? And you were like, yes, love that. You know, people that are happy to come on a podcast are my best friends. So why don't you give us a quick introduction of yourself and your kind of career to come to where you are now, which if I'm right, is like pretty much the beginning of your safety career, hopefully.
Pretty much, yeah. So, thanks, James. So, yeah, my name's Steve Ashby. I am from, I live in Norfolk at the moment. I'm just pushing 40, so getting
nice
on
and young.
I wish it was. Yeah, I wish I was your age again. I can actually say that now. So, I've got, I'm a family man. I've got a newborn sitting at, downstairs at the moment, being quiet for a change, a 5-year-old and a 15-year-old. So,
oh, wow.
So newborn and GCSEs, interesting.
Wow.
Especially at the moment.
Yeah.
So But yeah, my family basically is the thing that gets me out of bed in the morning.
Love
that. I've got to make my work life as interesting as possible. So, but basically, I started my career back in 96. That doesn't make me still sound old.
Well, not to make you feel old, but I would have been 6 years old. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're right. Yeah, that's six. Yeah, quite a good age.
Yeah, I'd have been 6 years old. Sorry, not to make you feel really old.
So I'm a, I'm a carpenter by trade. Did an apprenticeship, which I finished in 2000. I was on the tools till about 2005 when I started a management career from, I suppose, the bottom of the management rung. I might get shot down for this, but I was a foreman and worked my way up to site management, and then went, had a couple of roles in project management. I've worked with Frey through quite a few sectors and employers. I was subject to various cultures and attitudes from both management and workers. I couldn't really settle in the job, to be honest.
Okay.
It wasn't till I realised kind of my passion in health and safety, it sort of became apparent why, really. I don't like being stuck in a job in the same place day after day, generally doing the same thing, although site management is a little bit varied. Yeah. I do love variety, love challenges, and I suppose one of the things that interests me is perhaps I like to have an influence and encouraging change.
I think you'll get all of them.
Site management is kind of, and project management is not, I don't consider by and large being part of that process really, but I kind of, that's where I am at the moment anyway. I've not really had any employers since 2010, which I finished my longest employment, that I felt valued in my job. So I decided to make a change in career in the hope that I could do something about it.
I like that. I want to talk about your kind of choice to come over to health and safety and your passion about that in a bit. What I would love to kind of dive into first is I think, and like I was saying a minute ago, is that kind of one of the main things that get me excited about having you on the podcast is that I genuinely believe that there's still a lot of safety professionals out there that think that we are not the problem. That think that the problem are, you know, what you used to be, the foremans, the chippies, the tradesmen, except you're the problem. You're not listening to us. You know, we're coming along. We're telling you what you need to do and you must do it. Now, don't get me wrong. Not all safety professionals are like that, just your old fashioned ones. And if at the end of this podcast, we can kind of convince that one or two old fashioned people that listen to this podcast, if I'm honest, if you're old fashioned, you'd probably stop listening after episode two. but if they, you know, they held on and they're still listening, you know, that perception of health and safety being that health and safety gone mad kind of perception.
Yeah.
It is still there, in my opinion. And I'd like to just kind of explore what that feels like from a point of view of being a foreman. Like, what are the kind of interactions you were getting with safety professionals back when you were on site? And how, let's just stick with that first. You know, what kind of experience were you having with people like me, for example, but like years ago?
So from a trade perspective, I think the health and safety profession seem, they, from my experience, overcomplicated. That's from the trades perspective. And it's not all organisations. Some of them just seem hell-bent on enforcing PPE, and that is all it seems to be. I've seen health and safety site managers moaning about not wearing a hard hat when there's work at height risks not being properly controlled, and that gets bandied around a lot. That's just a common example, but it's always seemed to be a box ticking exercise. Right, and this is really only changed for me, my perception of it recently. But that's where I come from, my trades background. And that's the experiences I've had, basically.
It's interesting you say that. I always use this example, but I remember when I was in my first ever role in safety, and I was walking around for a lot, and I've anyone that's ever been on a training course with me, which to be honest, you're probably not listening to this podcast. So I probably said this this example in this podcast before, but I use it all the time because I just think it's so classic health and safety. And anyway, I'd left the factory. I was going walking around the corner to the local Subway, as you do, and I walked past this warehouse essentially, and I walked past it every single day. But I'm quite an observant person. I like to look around. I think as you develop in your career in health and safety, you'll get trained to do that. Especially if you start doing like bio risk assessments, you end up just having a natural reaction of walking in a room and doing this. And just looking around everywhere.
Yeah.
You just do it all the time. It's probably the biggest bane of your life as you kind of progress in it. But that aside, and I was doing that, so I was walking down and I saw these like two gents on the roof and one gent on the floor. I was quite young and cocky in my career in health and safety. So I went over and had a chat with them. And then I could see that these guys, like, they weren't tied down to anything. Like, they had the harness on, they had the high vis on, they had a hard hat on, which I'm still yet to find somebody to give me a solid answer as to why people wear hard hats working on a roof. Like, what's going to hit you on the head? Bird shit.
That's quite common, see?
Yeah, and it is. I see it all the time. No one's giving me a solid argument as to say, well, a plane could come down and hit you on the head or something. I really don't know. But anyway, so they're wearing all the PPE, like you just said, they're wearing all the PPE. They were wearing a harness. That harness was attached to nothing. There was no edge protection or anything. And I just said, gents, what are you doing to reduce the likelihood of your people falling off a roof? And they were like, oh, we're wearing a harness. Yeah, but your harness is not attached to anything. And the guy literally, honestly, this is not a joke. People don't believe me sometimes. He literally went, hey, Bob. Bob, shouting up to the roof. I just used Bob as an example. I don't know what his name is. But, hey, Bob, what do you want? This lad says we're supposed to be wearing a harness connected to summit. And he's like, nah, check the policy, mate. So he goes up, literally goes into his van, opens this glove compartment, whips out like this massive wad of paper. And he's like, flicks through all of it. And then he gets it. And he's like, nah, just says wear a harness, mate.
I've seen that. You say that. I have seen that before.
Yeah.
Scaffolders. Some scaffolds are quite renowned for that. You get two carabiners, then you get two for the rest. So basically, when you're climbing across the scaffold, and you will connect one, and when you've got to move, you'll connect the new one and then disconnect the old one, so you're not exposed to a risk.
Yeah.
And the times I've seen scaffolders wandering across the scaffold, I mean, none of them attached.
No.
So it's quite common.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I think it is. I mean, I've never touched wood. I don't ever want a job in construction, if I'm honest. But I've never worked in construction. But I've been a client a lot of the time. So doing it from that point of view, managing it from our duty as a client. But the amount of times I just drive past construction sites and just think, what are you doing? And I think when you say there, like, it really kind of struck a nerve with me when you're saying that your experience of it is people just enforcing PPE. I think that's true.
Yeah. I don't know why there's such a focus. I really don't. But, you know, it is changing. I have seen it changed over recent years.
Okay.
And it is getting better.
Is it? Okay. So let's explore that for a little bit. It's slightly off on the tangent. But when you say you think you feel like it's changed, what makes you say that?
It's more so on the bigger companies. I don't know. I can't put my finger on exactly why it's changed. Obviously, attitudes. Attitudes are now changing.
Well, like the attitudes of like the workers, the tradesmen, etc.
Yeah.
Or everybody.
Everyone, I think. It is definitely better than what it was. Definitely. I mean, I've been on jobs where, as an agency carpenter, where I have been told, get up on that roof, been doing a pitched roof, walking across the joists, no edge protection, no fall protection, nothing. And that was perfectly acceptable. And this was only 10 years ago, years ago. Now, I don't know if it's perhaps different sites and different companies I've worked on, but there is more of an emphasis on keeping people safe. But it seems to me that the way it's done perhaps gets people's back up the tradesman's backup. So it always seems to be focused on punishment and you've got to do this, you've got to do that, or this will happen and that will happen. You'll get this red card, and yellow cards. You heard of them?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Instructions, they get found about a lot. So, and...
Didn't that have any value?
I don't think that helps change. I really don't.
So you don't think that the red card, yellow cards, they have no value, really, in your opinion?
It depends how they're used. If they're used for, I mean, one of the large top-tier main contractors I worked for quite a while ago, they would issue the yellow cards and red card system, and it was a punishment. So if you did something wrong, you'd get a yellow card. If you get a second yellow card, you basically get two yellow cards, and then you get a red card, same as football, I suppose. And then you're offside. I think the second yellow card constituted a re-induction. Now, they might be for silly little things, like at the time, it was you had to wear your goggles all the time. Even if you weren't doing anything, just walking across the site, you wear your safety specs. So if they caught you not wearing the safety specs, it was, oh, you, yellow card, what's your name? Pretty much police.
Would they literally get a yellow card out of the pocket, like in a football?
No, you would get a yellow card put in on your site file, though.
Oh,
so go against your company.
Yeah. I would piss myself if you had some like health and safety geezer pulling out like a yellow card with a whistle.
Yeah, but yeah, I've seen that, and that just makes people hide problems to me.
Yeah.
If there's a problem, I mean, this was a main top tier contractor, this was. So
do you feel like there's no kind of, so they're doing the red card, the yellow card, but like, is there in your experience, even if there is or isn't, I suppose it doesn't matter, because if you would have been a tradesman there or a foreman or whatever you were at the time, you felt at that time that it was just a form of punishment. There was no kind of further investigation as to, well, let's try and understand why Steve's not wearing his goggles, and you never saw anything like that, or even if you did, like, how'd that make you feel? Was it just punishment?
You could be the best behaved tradesman on site. You could be absolutely to the T, and you might be walking across site and perhaps come out of the site office and forgot to put your safety glasses on, and then you'll get a yellow card, and that's kind of marked on your file. So that instantly made people go on the defence, I suppose. And the other thing it did was, at the time, I was a foreman at the time, and I was used to get, whenever the safety visit was due, we used to get the heads up for a phone call, and I used to run around all the trades on site. Bear in mind, this was a huge multi-storey office building in the centre of London. We used to have to run around and tell all the trades, or phone all the trades and say, quick, health and safety's on site. Make sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, basically.
And at that point, would everybody just put their goggles on, their hard hats on, their high vis on, or...?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the company I worked for was the company of my longest employment, because they absolutely valued... They were strict, but they had good values, and I enjoyed working for them, and they valued me, and they valued everyone that worked for them. But this was a case in point of the hard hat and the glasses that you just mentioned. They might be in little finished rooms with full lighting, everything's all finished inside. They might be touching something up, you know, might be painting. Don't need to particularly wear your glasses and your hard hat doing that if there's no one else around you. But if the safety man walked in and saw you without your glasses and your goggles, then it was an instant penalisation. And the other thing is, there was safety scores as well. So they would mark you down for that, and then your safety score would be produced at the end of the month. And it would be whatever less for that reason.
No, I do know what you mean. I think I still see it now. And I can understand where some of this stuff, like the safety scoring and stuff like... So in construction, most people are subbies, aren't they? And granted, I understand that varies. But you know, most people are subbies, which gives them the flexibility to say, right, get off site. Because essentially, you're firing someone without going through any of the HR procedures that you need to. Which is, again, also a bit dodgy. But I'm not a HR professional, so I won't go down that route. But... There is a point of like contractor management to be able to say, you know, we're gonna have a health and safety scoring system, and I think there's no problem with that. You know, I think my concern with all of this stuff is there's no middle way point. Do you know what I mean? Like we're very extreme, and I think that this happens now. This stuff happens now. I see contractors being audited to go into a house and refit a kitchen, and then we send an auditor in, and the auditor marks them down by saying, right, you're not wearing a high vis. I remember sitting in a meeting, you know, not so long ago, and our contract manager's giving his contractor a bashing by saying, you know, you're losing loads of points and you're safe here, yeah. And we're going to dock you some this and do that. I can't remember what the punishment was, but there was some kind of contractual punishment. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. For what for? And they're like, every day they're being spotted not wearing high vis. And I'm like, where are they working? Oh, we're just doing kitchen refits in a minute. Why do they need to wear a high vis in someone's kitchen?
Because the JCB could drive through the kitchen in one moment, clearly.
Yeah, I'm not being funny. If a car hits them in the kitchen, I'm more concerned about how the car got to the kitchen, not the fact they weren't wearing the high vis.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is that short-sightedness that I think creates this perception. So, I mean, one of the conversations I wanted to have with you was that, in your opinion, this perception of health and safety is warranted, in your opinion. I think we've just agreed that it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, this stuff happens. We are going, in some cases, over the top. And in my opinion, what that does is it has a kind of an effect later on. It creates a risk in a way by you and your team then not listening to anything to do with health and safety because you've been annoyed you're having to wear PPE all the time, and you think, well, that's pointless. Therefore, you tar all of health and safety with the same brush, and then don't listen when you're working at height, for example, which is a serious risk that we need to manage, which we would need to go maybe a little bit more over the top, to use that phrase.
Would you
agree? Do you think that happens? Do you think people kind of switch off from it because they get pissed off on the ground floor, but then when they're doing something more serious, they don't really consider the risks? Because they're hard with that perception.
Yeah, it does actually. Some people as well, I've noticed, will do it out of spite as well. I mean,
really, that's interesting.
Yeah, I've seen people get moaned at so much for not wearing high vis hard hats, and then relay to the site management team that, oh, this is wrong. Why are you moaning about my hard hat when there's this and that and this and that wrong? Yeah, and then the response is just get your hard hat on. And then they don't bother to report anything. Don't bother to, if they're not going to take it seriously, why should we, you know, why should we report new misses? Why should we see there's a gaping great hole in the scaffold there? What's the point in reporting it if they're just going to keep going on about hard acts? So it does put people's back out, you know, backs up a lot.
Do you think that the perception is so the kind of I'll say perception, yeah. The perception of health and safety, because there are some people doing it right. There are some people doing it right. So some businesses, you know, I've spoke about my best mate on this podcast time and time again. He's a brickie, has been since college pretty much. He always knew he wanted to be a brickie, and he always sends me videos and photos of just horrible stuff that I just think, why are you doing this? Or he sends me videos and messages and photos of just some really crazy, over the top, pointless stuff, and there's just no in between. And then the other day he sent me a photo and he said, James, you'll love this. This is probably the best site I've ever worked on. And he showed me this site where basically everything was kind of organized. There was a clear road, there was a clear pathway, there was clear storage area. It had been marked out on the ground, bricks, cement, whatever. I'm not a brickie, so I don't know what they are, but all of their kind of raw materials, I had it set out. And I said to him, like, forget health and safety, that must just be a better, an easier way to work, surely. Like, you know where everything is. Like, you know, in manufacturing you have like Lean Six Sigma and all that stuff. And all of that is really is like good organization and kind of being efficient with your processes. And must just be better to work like that. And he said, yeah, I suppose he did say, like, you have to get used to it because he's so used to just plonking everything where he is. But, you know, and he'd been in this since college. So he's just exactly the same age as me. So it's a fair few years. And that's the first time he's worked on a site that had that level of organization. Yet if you go and do your SMSTS or whatever it's called, the site supervisor course, you know, one of the requirements is you have to draw a site plan and they judge you on how organized that is. But yet I've not been to one site, or he's not been to one site that is anywhere near as organized as what you're required to do in the training. So there are good people out there, and this very long story is going to get to a point, I promise. There are people out there doing a good job, and that, I want to make that clear, because I don't want people to think that this is just a health and safety professional bashing session, which it's not. But my question to you is, you kind of put your foreman, your tradesy kind of hat back on. You come across a good health and safety professional, one that's very good at talking to you, he's relaxed, you know, he's like, I'm here to help, Steve, you know, there's some stuff that I need to be quite strict on because the risk is high, you know, it's just a general good bloke or woman, they're quite reasonable, they're exactly what you want a safety professional to be. Do you think the perception is too far ingrained in people that it doesn't matter now? Do you know what I mean? Like, kind of like being a racist, it doesn't matter if that minority is good or bad, nice person, you're not going to listen because you're racist. Do you get what I'm saying? That's a really horrible analogy. But do you think we've gone too far? There's no way to bring this back, or
no, absolutely not. And I don't even think it's that bad. I've probably made out through my experiences, I've basically only explained to you everything that's negative that's happened about health and safety advisors and health and safety experience.
What I'm trying to work out is, like, in your opinion, do you think that, like, there's a lot of colleagues that you've worked with, etc., that, like, have made a decision about me as a health and safety professional before they've even met me? Do you know what I mean? Like, they know what I'm going to be like. So it doesn't matter if I'm like that or not. They've made that decision.
Yeah. I see that a lot, actually. You can't change people overnight, can you? It's all down to, there's a lot of factors, I suppose, that varies on people's opinion on what.
Well, how long do you think? I think you're right. And it's a really difficult question. I get why you. You're kind of struggling.
Even
if I was to answer it, I think like this is just how my kind of brain works. Like, it's that kind of, I see it so much, you know, even outside of construction, you know, I see it. People are nervous, or they've made a judgment about me before I've even turned up because of my title. You know, we joke about it within the industry to say, like, you know, oh, hi, Steve, nice to meet you. What do you do for a job? Or I'm a foreman on site. Oh, cool. What site are you working on? And the conversation goes, you know, hi, James, nice to meet you. What do you do? I'm a health and safety professional. Oh, bloody hell. Do you know what I mean? It's that. And I'm concerned that, we're not going to change it. So I feel like what you're trying to say is, yes, we can change it, but like over a long period.
I know what you mean. And I don't think it's down to the health and safety, you know, professional per se. Everyone's different. Everyone's got different perceptions of what health and safety and risks are, and what's acceptable and what's not. It's very varied on how someone is. There's so many factors in people's attitudes towards health and safety, and their attitudes towards the likes of you that are working in health and safety. And it's, I kind of think that it's down to how they're brought up, who they work with, what companies they work for, how they've been treated. If they've been with a bad employer that doesn't give two hoots about health and safety, and perhaps put them, you know, put lives at risk on a daily basis, then they're going to come to a new employer and look at health and safety professionals as a problem, aren't they? Straight away.
That's exactly what I'm trying to work out. So maybe if I was to rephrase the question, it might be a bit better. If you were to, as a person with like years of experience as a foreman, as a chippy, etc., what would you want to see from a health and safety professional? That would be that's a better question, I think.
Yeah.
What does a good one look like to you?
A good one. I'm going to answer that. My previous experience with health and safety advisors and going back to my days in London, the good health and safety advisor would come in, have a coffee, have a chat, ask how the family was. The health and safety visit would be a more kind of informal thing. It would perhaps just be a walk around. You haven't even got to say hazard spotting. I mean, I've walked around with health and safety guys and just chatted with them all day, and they've not even said anything, unless obviously there's a major issue. Got back and said, this, you know, good job on site. It looks really nice, it's clean, tidy. You've done this good, but I've got these points to raise. Can you just have a look and see what is? So I think it's about how it's approached, how personable you are.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a shameless sponsorship clip. In all seriousness, guys, we partnered up with DRM Group. You know, David McLean's been on the podcast time and time again. We absolutely support his message, and he's got a brand new online course to help you. I'm going to let him tell you all about it now.
The brain can be trained to think and behave differently, to think in more positive and optimistic ways. And there are steps that you can take to train your brain to feel good for good. And we call this lasting positive change. Through our 16-day program, which includes daily videos and action sheets, taking you no longer than 15 minutes to complete a day, you will learn how to move away from thoughts of anger, hopelessness and frustration to a place of mental well-being and positivity.
Okay, guys, so if you're interested, you can click the link below and get a discount, special rebranded safety discount. Full disclosure, we get a little bit kickback from that. So at the same time as improving your mental health, you can support your favorite health and safety podcast and YouTube channel. I'll let you get back into the content.
I like that.
Yeah, I think how personal right. You are. I've also had it come in officious and stiff, and straight away before you even go out on site. I mean, I've seen the face on some site managers. I've seen the fear in site managers' eyes before when they get the phone call to say the health and safety guy's in the car park, and they've absolutely cracked themselves.
Really?
Just not knowing that they could have the best site in the world, but knowing that health and safety guy's here is coming to dictate the rules to them and to say, this is not right, or this is not right, and just come and fault find. It's just, you know, it's that's why sometimes the health and safety profession gets a bad rep, and it's not always justified. Because
I think you're right. I remember going to starting with a new company and going to a site to do a health and safety audit. Now, I'm not a massive fan of audits. If I was going to go to a site, if I'm honest, I would say it's a visit or a chat or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. But I think the term audit comes with an enforcement kind of mindset. I think that's how people interpret it. I'm being audited. There's only bad things are going to come from this. A list of work to do to be better, or a telling off. I'm never going to get, you know, good, because all auditors are looking for something wrong. So anyway, that's just my rant about audits. I was going to the site to do an audit, and I just got to the site, and like I'm extremely relaxed in the kind of way I approach people, and I like exactly what you just said. I'd like to approach it like that. I'm coming here for a coffee. I've just been driving for 2 hours. The first thing I want to do is sit down, have a coffee, get to know you, understand who you are. Hi, Steve, how you doing? How long have you been working this site? You know, what do you do as a hobby? Just general chit chat.
Yeah.
Because I want you to relax as well. But anyway, the second I walked through this door, I just could tell this person was so uptight. They were so nervous, and literally like ran up to me, and they were like, hi James, welcome to blah blah site, I was just wondering if you could just sign in over here, thank you, this is the sign in book, you'll see the name, the title, the da-da-da-da-da, and like taking me through the whole thing, and I'm like, this is either really comprehensive and this guy loves health and safety, or this guy's been royally screwed over by a safety person before. Yeah. And I'm not sure yet, but I'm going to wait and see. So anyway, he's like, I'll just give you a quick induction. Because you're a visitor, if you wouldn't mind wearing this orange high visibility jacket. And I'm not going to explain what type of site it was because it would give away what company it was. But it wasn't a building site. It wasn't a factory. It wasn't anything like that. The risk of me walking around, I did not need a orange high-vis. But anyway, it gives me this orange high-vis. And I literally went to, really? You want me to wear that? He's like, yes, please. It is part of our health and safety policy, which I will show you later. And he's really like nervous. Practically shaking, this guy. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. And he's like, should we go for a walk around the building? And I'm like, if you don't mind, mate, I'm in a car for 2 hours. I really need a wee and I'd love a cup of coffee. And he's like, oh, right, yeah, okay, let's do that. And we got into the kitchen, made a coffee, sit down, and I'm talking to him, he's still really nervous. And I just remember saying to him, I'm going to call him Steve just because you're right in front of me and that's the name. And I said, look, Steve, what is wrong? Calm down. Is there something happened today that you need me to leave and just come back, or can I help, or what? And he's just like, no, I want to get this audit, you know, really, I want it to be good. And I'm like, just relax. I'm not come here to destroy your business or your site and tear you apart and get you to lose your job or anything. Calm down. I want you to enjoy this experience. I'm just here for a chat. Yeah, but it's an audit. It's an audit. And I was like, yeah, it is an audit. That's what it's called. But I'm just going to look at your paperwork and I'm going to try and help you fix the problem. Just calm down. And eventually started to calm down. And then I went back like a few months later and like we started to get to know each other. And then I went back again and we started to talk away. And it finally came out that this person that used to have my job in my area was an absolute prick. And he said that sometimes he would point and get real close to me, point at me and shout and be like, why have you got this like this? And I'm just like, what the hell? So this guy was physically scared me because of the term health and safety audit, because of the last person that came before me had built this perception of what I was going to be. And it was horrible to experience. Yeah, I never want to experience that again in my life. I felt so sorry for the bloke. He was like sweating and everything. I just felt so sorry for him.
See, that's why I don't think punishment. I mean, he's obviously fearing perhaps repercussions or punishment from your report or from the health and safety report.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't think punishment always works, because you're just going to scare people, aren't you? I mean,
I think there's a time and a place, in my opinion. Yeah. I think there's a time and a place. I think, so I always kind of talk about it, if someone to say, how should I manage health and safety? And I'd say, you should manage health and safety the same way I manage my dog. So my dog mostly gets positive reinforcement, mostly, right? But there are times where I have to be very stern with them and I sometimes lose my shit a little bit. But that aside, sometimes I'd be really stern. So I say most of the time it's, you know, carry on with your job, how are we doing, blah blah blah, let's do this, be quite flexible, you know, work with people, talk to them. But sometimes the risk gets really high and then that's when I flip into serious mode and I say, nope, Steve, stop right now. Listen to me and stop right now. This is like imminent danger. We need to be really strict, got permits to work, you know, get real heavy on it. But then tomorrow, when that risk is gone and we're doing something completely different, we relax a lot more. That's how I like to see it. I think punishment, I think
that goes.
Go on.
Exactly the same. I read something the other day. I was talking to someone about punishing kids. I was arguing that you don't need to punish children. So I got on Google and I looked up and there was something and I thought, this is health and safety 101. This guidelines for the best, kind of the most research and the best way to kind of develop your child. It worked in the work capacity as well. I thought it was brilliant. And it was things like showing them and telling them right from wrong, how they should behave. Culture, setting clear limits, consistency in rules and behaviours, giving consequences, what could happen. No, you know, not punishment, but what, you know, the outcome could be. And this was children. And it's like, wow. And the same as your dog analogy. It doesn't always, some instances, that's why the law is there, isn't it? It's got to be punished, but
by and large. I think there is a place for it. But I think it's in very extreme circumstances. And I think the problem is we punish more than we reward. I think that's my biggest concern. And I do think I quite like, you've got like Sydney Decker's work, who talks about like just culture. Andrew Sham and Judith Hackett, they talk about it as well. You know, a lot of people talk about it. It's got, a lot of people don't like Sydney Decker's work, and that's fair enough, whatever. I'm not a massive advocate for anyone's work, if I'm honest. I like bits and bobs of everybody, but that aside, I like the idea of a just culture. It's to say, you know what, if you blatantly do something wrong, and you knew it was wrong, and you just did it anyway, you know, essentially you're just being a complete ass, then yeah, you're going to get punished, and you're going to get enforcement. The same as my dog, he knows 100% he's not allowed to bark out the window, but he still does it, and he bloody knows, because the second I stand up, he runs to his bed, because he knows he's going to get told off, but he does it, and he bark, and he'll look at me. You know, and I'm not saying that everyone at work is a dog and they're all stupid, and you're not saying that everyone's got the brain of a child either. But what I'm saying is there are similarities in this stuff. And I do genuinely think that we overly rely on punishment. These red card, yellow card things, you know, it's like, what? You know, safety. I remember we had Stephen Melvin on, who I've not spoken to in a long time, actually, but we had him on the podcast, you know, just a normal safety professional come on just to have a chit chat about manual handling. And I said, why are safety professionals walking around, you know, punishing people for not lifting correctly? Why are they not going around rewarding people for lifting correctly? Because there's more people lifting correctly than there is incorrectly. But I think positive reinforcement works a lot better. So I do think punishment has a place, but punishment should come after positive reinforcement, in my opinion. I mean, I've got my first kid on the way, so I'll let you know how that works out.
Congratulations. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if this is going to work. I might just go full down the punishment route and just be like, right, I'm smacking your ass. Why? Just because I want to smack your ass.
Wow.
But it is interesting, and I do see a lot of similarities. I mean, in one of Andrew's books, actually, he even mentions like a method. I think it's called ABC, and I can't remember. It's action, behavior, consequence. So he uses the example of his sister feeding the kids dinner. So, and it reminded me of my little brother. So there's quite a big age gap between me and my brother. So it's about 10 years. So, you know, I was a teenager when he was like 6 and whatever. And he was a nightmare for eating his dinner, an absolute nightmare, because when I look back on it, he knew that dinner meant bath and bed straight away afterwards. And in this book, Andrew was saying his sister absolutely nails the ABC method. The action is eat your dinner. The action is to eat your dinner. The behavior is we want you to eat your dinner. We want you to, the good behavior is you're eating it nice, quick, you're doing it calm, whatever. The consequence was after your dinner, mummy will come and sit down and play with you, full on dedicated mummy, daughter, son, whatever time. So the consequence of eating a dinner was positive and not negative. And I think that's the opposite of, which that's good, but that's the opposite of what we do in health and safety. We do, you know, action, wear your hard hat, behavior, you're not wearing it, consequence, yellow card. Do it again, yellow card. Do it again, red card. And it's like, there's no, well, wear my hard hat, why? Well, because you won't die. That's not good enough. You know, I don't wear a hard hat ever, and I'm still alive. That argument doesn't work.
No.
There's got to be some kind of positive reinforcement to this. So I think you're right, mate. I do think it has its place, but I do think it needs to be a rarity.
Yeah. I think, especially with sight, you have got to kind of make things as simple as possible. I mean, building sights, and this is no reflection on anyone's intelligence, but you have got to keep things simple, because trades have got things to do, and they've got, their mind has got to be focused on their work. So if you're going to overcomplicate health and safety, then you're just going to keep getting non-compliance, aren't you? I mean, that's kind of the by and large of it, really.
I don't think that's unique to construction. I think everywhere should keep it simple. You know, I think we overcomplicate stuff to the nth degree. You can overcomplicate it in the shop floor, and you can overcomplicate it all the way up to, you know, full on years and years of experience as a safety professional. We were talking about safety two and behavior based safety and bloody, I don't know, all the crazy schemes that are coming out and have been out for years. Everyone argues about them. And I just think, I don't see any problem with what the law is telling you to do, to be reasonable and practicable. What was ever wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, all you're trying to do here is create a nice place to work and be reasonable and be practicable. And that's it, you know, but yet we overcomplicate. And I understand what people are trying to do. They're trying to come up with a new way to do it, to sell a book and make loads of money. I get that. I'm not naive enough to say that. And they do have value. A lot of Sydney's work is good. A lot of Eric's work is good. You know, Andrew's work is good. But everyone just gets so bogged down in the complications. And sometimes I just see all this stuff that we implement at businesses, and I just think, why are you doing this? Like, prime example, we need to...
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, buddy. Right, I've got to remember you're the guest and I should talk less.
No, I'm... Yeah, carry on.
Prime example, I think, well, you know, some businesses will have a review process for a risk assessment. Primarily, this is quite common in fire risk assessments, right? So you have a fire assessment, and if you're quite a little bit switched on, you'll realize that when the consultant tells you you need to review it every year, that it's just a cash cow and that he's trying to get repeat business and you don't need to do that. Okay, so great, we've done that. But we should have an internal review process. Why? Well, because we need to review it. Why do you need to review it? Well, because the law says we need to review it. Okay, what are you going to do? Once a year, we're going to create this separate form, which is our review form. We'll fill out in there and we'll write down all the changes or not changes, and we'll sign it off and we'll keep that as a record to show we're reviewing the process. What do you think, James? I think it's a waste of paper. I think it's an absolute waste of time. The problem is you don't trust your staff to tell you if something's changed. That's the root cause of this, in my opinion. And some people would say I'm naive and I really don't care. I like to keep things extremely simple. You know, has anything... Hi, Steve, you manage number two on Bob Street. Yes, I do. Has anything changed in that building? No. And I'll explore that a little bit more. You've not had an extension. You've not had a change of your routes. You've not changed any rooms from a bathroom over to a bedroom. No, nothing like that. Have you changed anything with the people that only got any disabled people started working in there? No disabled people. All maintaining the alarms. Yeah, can I see all the records? Yeah, cool, they're there. Boom, no changes. Fire assessment stays as it is. We don't need to write anything down. But what if something goes wrong? If something goes wrong, the root cause is not that you didn't review it. The root cause is that something went wrong. So what was the reason something went wrong? Because you weren't managing whatever it was that caused the fire in the first place. I just feel like we focus on the plaster that we put on the wound and not on what made the wound, in my opinion. And we just overcomplicate stuff all the time.
I think that's kind of what you are for, and safety professionals, to take that complication in your head and then almost dumb it down a little bit, depending on what the devil you're talking to. So that's why the qualifications are so in depth and so mind boggling, especially for the likes of me, because we've got to know, or you've got to know all of this stuff so that you can break it down for the tradesmen and for the managers and for the business owners, because they don't need to know all the legislations and everything, do they? They just need to know what they need to do.
To be honest, mate, we don't even need to know the legislation. Nearly all legislation says the same thing. Risk assess it and do what's reasonable, practicable. Yeah. If anyone gets enforced on, they do it on the Health and Safety at Work Act. So, and that says what? Do what's reasonable, do what's practicable. Yes, there are, for more higher risk stuff, there are some much more prescriptive kind of measures. But for most of us, that's what we're dealing with. So let's have a quick chat then about kind of what was the point that you went from I'm a foreman, I'm a project manager, you're quite an extensive, I would say, maybe probably successful career in construction, that you're going to come and join the dark side and you want to be a safety professional. alluded to earlier, having a passion for it. I don't know anyone that's not extremely weird like me and a handful of other people that have a passion for this stuff. Where did that come from? Was there an event, or was there a moment, or was it gradual?
That was gradual. I've had, like I said earlier, I had people in the profession that were really nice and really coming. I used to look forward to Alex coming down for a coffee and Carl coming down for a coffee and a chat. And that, to me, was kind of like, oh, wow, what a great job. They've got going around sites, chatting to people, drinking coffee all day. I'm like, brilliant. This was like 10 years ago.
Don't tell people that's all we do.
Jesus. And then it was like the next visit would be from Anon, you know, Joe Bloggs. Would be like you said earlier with your guy, would be scared stiff. So yeah, it would vary so much. So it was like, why does it need, don't need to be like that? I know from my experience, they get better response out of me by being nice. And I've seen more people terrified of the health and safety profession than what I have actually me seeing the good side. So it was gradual. It was more so in my younger days. I did a sort of, I suppose when early days of site management, I did sort of see the health and safety professional. I think it was Alex and Carl at the time. And I did sort of look up to them and thought, actually, these are quite nice guys. And yeah. And then I would kind of be a bit like tennis, would be bounding around. I'd meet a bad safety professional that would, you know, come and tear me a new arsehole or something really stupid. And then it'd be like, oh no, what do I want to do this for? So it's built up. But I can see through the positives. It's made me realise that I think that I could probably do quite a good job doing this because I understand people.
I love that.
I've seen so many different personality types, and I like manipulating people. It sounds bad, but I do enjoy. I suppose it's quite a good feeling when you've got someone
influencing is the word you replace with manipulation. Yeah, just for future reference. Yeah, people don't like saying we know that's what we're doing. We're manipulating you, but yeah, we call it influencing.
Right. But it's quite a good feeling knowing that you've made a positive difference to someone that perhaps might have a negative attitude at the start, and then you actually say to them, "Well, actually, you know, you can. If you do it this way, it's going to make a lot more sense. It's going to make your job easier." And then seeing that end product of actually they want to do what's right, as opposed to at the start where they were like, you know, putting up against a brick wall. And I've done that in site management, and it's actually, the more I learn, the more I realise this is what health and safety is about. It's about making people realise the benefits it could have of being, positive health and safety attitude. It's like how saying to an employer, it's like, by doing this could make you more money. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, don't be stressing about the fact it's health and safety. It's like, you know, doing it this way, in the long run, it's going to earn you more dosh.
No, I love that. There's so much you said there that I really like. Firstly, I think Alex and Carl. I think they need congratulating for obviously being very good safety professionals to encourage you to join the industry. So well done, Alex and Carl, for being the good ones of the industry. Secondly, I think welcome to the profession, Steve. We're very happy to have you. I think we need more people that think like you. I think you're right. The fly going past my face. I think you're right. You know, there's an old saying. I say that like I'm this old wise Chinese man.
I've got a few years on you, mate.
But there's a saying that somebody told me a long time ago that, you know, good safety is good business, and I don't think people believe that, and I don't think people follow that. But I think you're right. I think I like to think of this stuff as being efficient with our risks. You know, we have risks in a business. We need to be efficient around them, and to be efficient in a business is to kind of, you know, not lose money and be as streamlined as possible. So I think you're right. I think good safety is good business. I think if you look at it from an overall point of view of managing risk, then then you're probably going to help your business even more. The more people that think like you, the more people that think, you know what, this is about talking to people, this is about influencing people, maybe potentially manipulating them, but I wouldn't want to give away all of our data. But you know, it is about that. It's just kind of understanding people. And I like the fact that you've kind of seen what we do and in an industry and been attracted to it to be able to come over and help people. Because I think something I struggled with when I was young in my career, and to be honest, still struggle with now, if I'm brutally honest, yeah, I would say I still struggle with it now, is that it's a very thankless job. You know, good is nothing happens. So if I do my job right, nothing happens. So we can go, obviously it changes company to company, but I've been in so many companies where you're not even considered. You know, you're like that one vital part in a machine that is required, but you're that small that no one even knows you're there, but they'll know you're not there. Do you know what I mean? If you disappeared, because something would seriously go wrong, and it can get you really down sometimes. I think, you know, people only email you when something's gone wrong. People only email you and look to you when something's gone wrong, and they want you to make all the decisions, even though you've been banging on the door telling them to fix this for years. And then all of a sudden, what you've been saying for years actually happens, and they go, "Well, James, what do we do?" And I'm like, "Well, I can sit here and say I told you so, or we can work together and try and figure this out." So you've got to be a kind of unique person to do this job, I think.
Yeah, but you're right, isn't it?
When you messaged me, I just love the fact that you've kind of gone from, probably in my experience from an outside perspective looking in, one of the worst industries in health and safety statistically, and I think from a perception based point of view, to going, do you know what, I don't want to run away from safety. I want to come in. I want to join. I want to join the kind of the rebel alliance against the kind of old fashioned way of doing things, in a way.
Well, thank you. Yeah,
I love that. So well done. That's a big decision to make. And you're doing your, did you say you're doing your NTRQ now, aren't you?
Yeah. So I've done the NTRQ certificate. I've just failed my first assignment on HCSD2, which is the civil liability one. Which I'm struggling to get my head around.
I've been doing this for 8 years, and I struggled with the second book. I was talking to a colleague of mine yesterday, he's been doing it longer than me, and I think he's been in the game for about, he's older than me, but he was in the armed forces, etc. I'm sure he's done safety longer than me, but anyway. And I said to him, the second book, juicy, mate. It's hard. I think it for anyone, mate. So don't beat yourself up.
I am the next one I'm looking forward to, the behaviour one. That's kind of like what I like. So yeah. I think talking about law is probably, it's hard to digest, I think. But yeah, so I'm doing the NDRQ, going on to do a diploma. I'm enrolled in an MVQ, but you need evidence for that, so I'm struggling. And I've done the NEBOSH construction certificate as well, which is okay. I'm 2/3 of the way through that. So I've passed 2 assignments. So that's where I am. And then I'd like to carry on once I've got the diploma. Maybe one day do a university degree, if my intelligence stretches that far. my trades background might limit it a little bit.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
No offence. like I said, behaviours, that really fascinates me and interests me in people. So maybe behavioural safety is something I'd like to further. I don't know, but it's money and time at the moment, and getting the first bit done.
I agree. All of this stuff costs money, which is a shame. If it was all free, we'd all be really intelligent. But you know, YouTube, mate, podcasts, there's loads of good podcasts out there, especially one about health and safety called Rebrand and Safety. But that aside, there are some amazing ones. From a safety point of view, it's David Provan's one, Safety.
All right, I haven't heard of that one.
Oh, what's that called? Safety of Work. That's very good. Those two are like geniuses, basically, doctors of stuff. And theirs is much more kind of technical, and they talk about like research articles and stuff like that. That's a really good podcast to listen to if you like that stuff, for yourself and anyone else listening. I'm trying to think of other stuff. I talk about the books and that all the time, but
Sydney Decker and that. I listen to a pre-accident investigation podcast, Todd Conklin.
Yeah, Todd Conklin. So that guy's
very easy to listen to. That's like cool systems based stuff.
It's American, isn't he, Todd?
American. Mm. And then there's a couple of local ones I listen to as well as yours. I've only recently cottoned on to you, actually. I do apologise, but
terrible.
I binge listened to a couple of others, and then it was like your one come up. I was like, oh, I haven't tried James yet. And then I started, and then that was kind of when I messaged you and said, yeah, thanks, you're doing it. That's actually really good. Where have I been?
Todd Conklin's very good. I've listened to a few bits of Todd. I do like him. He's very easy to listen to. He's a good lad. I'm hoping to go to an event later on in the year which he's speaking at, which would be amazing if I can meet him. But I like his stuff. Yeah, I think Safety FM is part of the organization that do the Toddcast or whatever his is. So that's quite a good one for any yourself and any other listeners that want to kind of get some more. And there's a gentleman, I think Safety on Tap, I think it's called, he's from Australia. I can't remember his name, but his is quite good. I remember he messaged me a while ago, a long time ago. If he's listening, he might message me again, tell me to bugger off. But he messaged me a while ago because I used to say in my intro, like, this is most probably the only interesting health and safety podcast in the world. And it was just a tongue-in-cheek kind of statement, but he challenged me and messaged me on LinkedIn. He was like, actually, mine is also very interesting. And I'd never heard of his at that point, but it is a good podcast.
With Colin Nottage, have something to say about that then?
He stole the phrase and called his the interesting
podcast.
I don't know if he did steal it from me. I'm joking. But yeah, so there's loads of stuff out there.
Why have I missed out? I've literally the last 6 months I've only just discovered podcasts. So I've binge listened to the safety podcast, Richard Collins, Colin Nottage, you. And then Todd Conklin. So I'm working my way through those at the moment, and my only limit to that is time.
Yeah, there's more and more coming. Every day there's like a new podcast coming out. I think the Justice League of America, Justice League of Safety or whatever they're called, they've just, a group of safety professionals in America, they've just started one as well. When I started, there was a handful of people. You know what? Sonny Gopal's podcast was really good. I think he stopped doing his now, and I can't remember what that was called, but his was really good. From a behavioral-based safety point of view, he had Professor Scott Geller on, who I've mentioned a few times in the podcast, and that's really good. That was like a 5-part episode, and he was really good. So I like Sonny's as well, but Sonny stopped now, I think. I think he does do blogs and stuff, but he stopped his podcast. Anyway, stop telling people to go and listen to. I'll stop telling people to stop going listening to everyone else's bloody podcast. I kind of firstly wish you every bit of luck in your future career. And if you need any kind of support, I'm sure I'll be willing to pass you on to someone who listens to this podcast that's much more intelligent than me. But no, jokes aside, if you need any help, drop me a message. Tag me on LinkedIn or something. Many people in my network that are just absolute geniuses when it comes to this stuff that help you out. And you know what? I think there's someone who is just putting their foot into the kind of industry. I think you've been extremely brave to come on a podcast that's all about health and safety. It's a fair play to you, mate. A lot of people I message that say, look, I really want, a couple of people have messaged me saying, oh, I'm new into the career and thanks for your podcast. And I say, oh, come on, I really want someone who's like fresh in to talk about it. And they're like, no, I'm not coming on. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, James. It's been an absolute honour. Really has. And thanks for your podcast. And congratulations again, both on the diploma and the child.
When's it due? 16th of August.
Ah, wow, yeah.
Oh, but COVID is throwing a spanner in the works. So I am talking about risk management. Here is what I would probably think, if I put my health and safety professional hat on, a very reasonable control measure. But as a first-time father, something that's really upset me. I'm not allowed to go to any of the scans until this COVID thing is over. No meetings, no scans, no heartbeats, no nothing. So I'm lucky to have been to the first scan, lucky to have heard the heartbeat, but I'm not allowed to go to any of the stuff now. My wife has to go on her own, which I'm a bit of a control freak. I like to get really involved in everything.
So. Yeah.
That's really got me down, but
was that your decision then, or was that
the hospital made the decision and said that because of the COVID-19 to limit the spread,
and not necessarily people,
you're not allowed to take you're not allowed to take any guests with you whatsoever. So we're hoping that she'll be able to like record the video of the next scan, and I've asked her to get me a photo as well, so she'll do that. But it's a good example of kind of, you know, managing risk sometimes is just shit. Whether, you know, no matter what you come up with in the future, Steve or whatever, anyone else listening, one day they're going to implement something that people don't like. And I think that's a prime example. Because at first, my gut reaction was, what a load of shit. I need to be able to come to my future child scan. And then I had to stop myself, sit back and think, do you know what? Managing the risk is not, that's quite a good... That's quite a good way of doing, of managing the spread. I think this whole COVID thing has been fascinating from a safety professional point of view, to see how they're managing it.
People's reaction as well.
Yeah.
Is another thing, is how the people are dealing with it. Like, what was it, Sunday, the parks all across the country were packed, weren't they? Like, have you been reading the news or listening to the news?
And it's interesting from a behavioural point of view, like you're saying you're quite interested in that stuff, is all this kind of panic buying thing. And I genuinely don't think it's a panic buying problem. I think there was, at one point, I think maybe a lot of people panicked and brought maybe loads more than what they would ever buy, you know, stockpiling toilet roll and stuff. But I don't think that's the problem now. I think the problem is everybody is shopping more. And I think everybody is buying one or two more of everything that they buy, because they go into the shop, they see the shelves are empty. And I did it, you know, I went into the shop last Friday, I got my diploma results, I was very happy, I wanted to get a beer, right? So I go into the shop, it is like scarily
empty. Don't need an excuse to buy more beer.
I would normally, because if it's in the fridge, I'll drink it, right? So I would normally only buy about 8 cans or 8 tops, like a pack, 2 packs of 4 that would get me going Saturday and Sunday, or if their bottle is like probably 6 or whatever. But anyway, that's all I'll ever buy. So anyway, I go in, the whole shop is empty, like not just the bread, milk and meat aisle. It was every single shelf was just cleaned. And I was like, what? And I rang my wife and I'm going down. I'm like, if the fucking beers aisle is like this, I'm going to lose my shit. All I want is some chocolate and a beer. Galaxy chocolate, which is what I eat, gone. I was like, taking a piss. That was gone. So I was already pissed off. Got to the beer aisle. It was like cleaned. And I couldn't get the beer that I wanted. So I ended up trying some Old Speckled Hen, which worked out that I really like. So Old Speckled Hen, lovely. Yeah. Bit more expensive than what I normally get, but oh well. So anyway, it worked out okay, but I ended up buying, I have 3 4-packs instead of 2 4-packs. Why? Because I thought, well, next week when I want a beer, it might not be there.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's from a kind of, I'm no behavioral safety, behavioralist kind of psychologist expert or anything like that, but from all the books I've read and podcasts I listen to, I look at it and I think, what I did, that's the problem, is buying one more of everything. You buy things that are there because you think it might not be there next time. It's not a bulk buying problem, I don't think.
We've had a surge on fridge freezers, believe it or not.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I heard that. But yeah, I get that. Yeah, I went shopping the other day, just before the baby come here, and there was only the premium nappies left. You're finding all the expensive stuff left. Yeah. So I've had to get as many as I can get. And like you say, it's like, if I come next week or get an online shop, I'm going to substitute or not have it. So yeah. I've had to buy the premium brand nappies, which are way overpriced.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that it's there. So I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. We our next door neighbor's got a baby, and we've been given, we found out about our baby just before Christmas. So, it was before this, and a lot of people have given us a load of stuff, and we've been given like 5 or 6 packs of nappies that we're not going to use for like 5 months time. So we kind of said to a few friends of ours, and we said to our neighbors, like, look, we've got these nappies that if you want them, you can have them. Yeah. We're not using them, because, you know, you go to the shop like you just said and it's gone. And yeah. I think you're right. I don't think it's people going in and buying hundreds of packs of nappies. I think it's people buying one or two more, like you've done and like I've done. Yeah. But yeah, it is fascinating from a point of view. Anyway, we'd end up having a whole nother podcast about
COVID. I know, yeah. I wait that one with bated breath.
Let me just press.
Not that we're getting bored of hearing about COVID-19, but anyway.
Yeah, I'm working on something with three gentlemen at the moment about doing like a little panel, weekly panel about it. Not so much about COVID, but about the subjects around it. And we'll go from there, but keep your eyes out. We might be... I think it will come out probably next Monday, and then we'll do one a week from now on. And then once this dies down, we'll probably nip it in the bud. Depends how successful it is. If people like it, I might do it monthly after COVID settled down, just to get some ideas out there for people, help people. And there's a lot of businesses that are panicking, and, you know, the three gents that are coming on, I'm just going to play host basically, but the three gents that will come on, to be honest, when this podcast come out, they'd have been coming out anyway, so everyone will be like, oh, we know about this. But yeah, just for your information basically. So these three gents, they own businesses, and so I just thought, and I was talking to Jonathan about it was his idea, and we were just saying, you know, it'd be just good to just bounce back ideas off each other, do it at a recorded conversation, publish it, and some people out there who are struggling right now might go, do you know what, I didn't think of that. Let's get it. And just, but you know, it's difficult, because I don't want people to kind of take our advice as gospel. You know, it's just an idea. It's just an opinion. If you don't like it, go to the government. Please just follow the government's advice. We are not the government. So yeah. I'll be very clear before we start the podcast as a host that the government's advice is the one you should be following, not some jumped up 29-year-old and a couple of business owners on a podcast. You know what I mean? Right, Steve, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me, James. It's so much appreciated. And brilliant.
Thanks, buddy.
I've loved it.
Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Stephen. I really enjoyed it. Such a lovely guy, like such a really nice bloke. Really interested to see what happens and kind of join him on his journey as he progresses through his career in health and safety, which, you know, I hope he is successful in. And I'm sure we will see much more of him going forward, especially now he's doing podcasts and stuff as well. He's interested in all that. He's been messaging me since we spoke about podcasts, etc. So keep an eye out for this guy. I think he's going to be something big in the future. If you enjoyed this episode and you're listening on iTunes, give us a rate and review. It's just really nice thing to do, and I feel like you're a nice person. And you know, most people that listen to this podcast are really nice people, and they leave us rates and review. You don't want to be that one listener that's not doing it, do you? That would just be horrible. It must mean that you're just a horrible person, which I don't think you are. I don't think you are. So give us a rate and review to show us how nice you are. Nothing to do with algorithms or anything. Just, I think you're nice, and I think you deserve to people to know that you're nice. Anyway. I'm trying to use like moral pressure to pressure people to like the podcast and do all the rate and review things, you know. Well, it's much more effective than just asking them. It's like applying pressure under social constraints. Anyway, before I was rudely interrupted.
where were we? If you do any of that stuff under no pressure whatsoever, then you can screenshot it, share it, tag us at Safety Rebranded on Twitter or Rebranded Safety on Facebook and LinkedIn. Let us know and we'll give you a shout out and say, this is how amazing you are. This is how amazing this person is. Look how nice he is, or she is, or anyone is. Anyway, I'm going to go now because I've lost my train of thought. I'll catch you next week in the podcast. Safe.